The main source of hatred in the world is religion. And organized religion.
These Christian apologists are full of intolerance and expecting us to swallow it, but I'm not allowing this. First, they claim this is a Christian nation and then proceed to try to merge their little doctrine into biased legislation. Like we should give a damn about the God they praise or their book of contradictions written back in the days. Some mythological, hypocritical bullshit that tends to distort shit. And then you wonder why we all ignore this. You're atheists to each and every other type of God. For all you know, the one you worship ain't
completely. You are listening to the Skeptic Arrogance, March 6th, 2011. I am your host, Doubting Thomas, along with co-host R.W., the Rational Warrior.
How you doing, guys?
We have a great show lined up for you today. First, we will be interviewing Joe Zemecki, which is he is the founder and CEO of the Atheists Helping the Homeless in Austin, Texas. We'll be discussing the good work that they're doing down there helping the homeless and what he has in the works for the future things with the organization. And after that, we'll be interviewing Donald Wright, who is the author of Let Our People, The Only Prayer I'll Ever Pray Is Let My People Go, and discussing his new book, that book, and what led him to writing that, and how he's been received in the African-American community. But before we get started on that, I just want to say I'm very disappointed. I read an article this week about 35,000 African-American churches protesting Obama's abandoning of the plan that supports the gays not being able to get married. I'm just very disappointed in the fact that we're still so religious and choose to be so bigoted towards everybody else. It wasn't right. That long ago that people were telling us we couldn't do things because we're different.
Exactly. And
the most African Americans, I hear them say that, well, I wasn't born, you know, black. I didn't choose to be black. I was born this way. And for them to choose to tell other people that they can't do anything and impose on their rights is kind of crazy to me and ironic, because it wasn't that long ago it was happening to us. How do you know that these people aren't born gay? There's good evidence that a lot of them are born liking it, born this way.
It's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous.
I just feel that's terrible. It's a bad thing. And for our leaders in the church to continue to tell people these things and keep things segregated. They always talk about love and loving other people and accepting other people. If you really feel that God is against gay marriage, let God handle it. Why do you always have to put on the puppet hand of God and try to do what you think God wants you to do? If God doesn't like people getting married, if he exists, then let God take care of gay people getting married, but you won't do that. There's no God in this picture. That's what you're failing to see. There's no God. There's people in our Congress trying to make laws, trying to tell people what to do based on what they think their God wants us to do. Let God handle it. Why are you trying to take people's free will away if you believe this is true?
Right, right. And, you know, the other thing about that, Thomas, is that there are a lot of issues in the black community. I mean, I grew up in an impoverished, crime-ridden neighborhood. And I just think that there's a lot of churches on almost every other corner. There was a church. And if they put some of the energy that they're focusing on this into helping to correct the situations and the environment that their churches are in, then maybe they could make a true change in the community. But this just seems like a colossal waste of time and effort to me.
Right. Like you said before, they can't afford it. They can't afford the time to spend on these things. We have drug and violence in our neighborhood. There's a church on every corner, but it can't seem this thing. And especially for the Catholic African Americans out there, I don't know what you guys are thinking. You praise God and hallelujahs and everything on Sundays and he saved your lives, but he can't stop priests from molesting these kids. It's how do you figure that he's more worried about saving your lives than little kids being taken advantage of? It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy to
right.
me. You know, and what makes me mad, I'm often asked, why do I get so upset when I talk about religion? Why can't I just let people be? Because it's embarrassing, and it reminds me of when I was religious. I was so religious at one point in my life that I actually felt that slavery was probably a good thing, even though the institution was bad and a lot of people suffered. I looked at it as if it hadn't happened, then I would not know Christ right now. That's the thought that I had in my head. And when I think back on things like that and all the years of tithing and all the worthless hours I spend in church on Sundays for something that's not true, it makes me angry. It really
right.
does.
Right. I definitely understand that. Definitely understand it. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I grew up very religious as well. And I converted a couple of times from different to one, from one faith to the next. And basically, I feel like it was a colossal waste of time, because the one thing that they were attempting to teach me was to have faith without evidence, and as if that is that's a virtue. And I don't believe that that's a virtue. I don't think that it's ever a good thing to accept something based strictly off of wishful thinking, or just because it makes you feel good or it comforts you. Either it's true or it isn't. Now, you can pop the, I think the best middle ground with that is to simply say you don't know. But to have absolute certainty over things that we couldn't possibly know or have intimate knowledge of, and then to teach others to do so, to me, that's criminal.
Right. Yeah, and to teach them to be biased and discriminate against other people is based on something we can't know. That's
right. Right.
It's crazy to me. And we just finished with Black History Month. I love, you know, Martin Luther King. He's one of my idols. I grew up, we had the same birthday. I grew up looking up to this man. I respect Martin Luther King, and I love the work he did. I'll never, ever forget it. I will always cherish the work that he did. It's the reason why we have a lot of rights we do now. But I do not agree with his religious views. I can separate the two. I would say the man was great regardless of what religion he followed. He was great in spite of that. And every Black History Month, we talk about the same people. We talk about the same religious people, and we say we need Black History Month because the schools aren't teaching our history. If you ask me, we're doing just the exact same brainwashing. We're not teaching the history because we show the same people, and we think our movement has something to do with just religious, but it doesn't. There's a lot of African-American people throughout history who were not religious, who were also responsible for that movement, but you don't emphasize them. You Harriet Tubman every time, and Martin Luther King's, and Malcolm, all the religious people. What about the secular African-Americans who also just as important in these movements? And I mean, what about Thomas Jefferson and W.E. Du Bois? All of these people, these people were not religious, but they still had the same goals. It's crazy to me that we choose to brainwash our kids and think that Black is just synonymous with being religious. It's not. It seems like if you come out and say you do not believe these things and you're African-American, you're disowned by the community. You're a race traitor. It's crazy.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
I just don't know. How do we get past this? And the Al Sharptons and the Jesse Jacksons do not help. I just don't agree with those two. But we need to head in a different direction. It's very disappointing to see us still biased towards other people and trying to take their rights away when that's the same thing we complain about. And the fact that we hold a Bible under our shoulders that says slavery, okay, and then we're doing different campaigns is crazy to me. But that's – I'm done ranting, R.W.
You had to get it off your chest, man. I understand. I believe you. I understand.
But I would like to say thank you to the Black Atheists of America and all the other African-American atheists organization, the Black Skeptics blog, things like that. Get the word out. Let African-Americans know it's okay not to believe. I've seen more and more African-Americans come out on YouTube telling their story, and a lot of them haven't even told their families yet. So if they're on YouTube scared to even tell their families, just imagine how many more of us are scared to even show our face on YouTube and also not tell our family. It's a lot of us out who do not believe. There's a lot of us out there who sit in church every Sunday and do not believe this stuff, but you don't want to break up the family. You don't want to just cause more pain than needs be. And I understand that, but it's a lot of us out there that do not agree with this in any kind of way.
And the other thing is, Thomas, if nothing else, doubt is not a bad thing. Doubt is not a bad thing. It's not a negative, because it takes doubt. It takes a skeptical mind to actually go about finding out information, because it doesn't sound right to you. And if it doesn't sound right to you, you should go out and try to research it. But don't just sit there and be spoon-fed a doctrine or be given a claim that you don't even attempt to research to see if that claim is correct or not. And that a lot of times what happens is we're born into families that have a particular belief system. And when you're a child, that's the most vulnerable that you ever are. And you pretty much pick cues and learn lessons from the people, your parents, people that you trust, that take care of you. And a lot of times we just don't question. We accept it without questioning. And I think that's the, if nothing else, anyone gets from this show, we would definitely like for you to understand that doubt is not a negative. Being skeptical is not negative.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. And the fact that we're so religious is just crazy to me. It's the fact that we're so religious. It's one of those things I do not understand, especially for this religion that was used to enslave a lot of African Americans. It's the fact that we become one of the main voices for it. We've been noted as the most religious people in America, which is insane to me.
Right.
We're the most religious, but we're worthless in every category that means something. And the only category that we're prominent in is the religious one, which has absolutely no meaningful contribution to society itself for tithing and just nonsensical rhetoric. It just, I don't know.
I don't get it myself, man. I mean, the only thing I can say is that it's a lack of critical thinking. And it hurts us in a lot of ways, not just in terms of religion, but in terms of our political activism. Certain things that we will accept without looking into it any deeper. I mean, it hurts us in a lot of different ways. And there's nothing bad can come out of having a more skeptical mind, in my view.
Yeah,
nothing.
Well, now that I'm done ranting and getting all of my feelings, we'll go in and go to our first guest, Joe Zemecki of Atheists Helping the Homeless. We'll be speaking with him about the contributions his organization has had in Austin, Texas. And the great work that they're doing down there. I don't know if they're down there giving them devil's food cake and deviled eggs or what they're doing, but we'll talk to them about that.
Yeah. What up, people? I told you I'd give you a shout out, man. Happy birthday. Grand Unified Theory. Hey, yo, check it. This is why I'm extra. Listen. Yo. You hand me a beat, I'll abuse it like Catholic priests do to children during the holiest of Vatican weeks. The sack of my beats ain't fat, they enormous. To leave your brain gone, off and lost like a pack of Mormons. You disrespect my clan, you better run and hide. The same way Christians accept intelligent design. You push the truth aside, and ministers win. But if you're so strong in your beliefs, answer me this. If the memories of our lives retained in the brain dies inside and nothing remains. Wouldn't that mean you would have absolutely and positively no recollection, no recount of previous things when you die? Angels and demons, devils and gods do not await you. Even if your own condition would not escape you. Sit up in church with fake faith and false hope. Get up and burst out, amen, and praise God. Jesus, he saves lives. Molest your daughter and cheat on your wife at the same time. And claim I'm speaking the devil and that I'm going to hell. And as far as hell, speaking the devil. It's amazing how this God is ubiquitous, omnipresent, existent in every stitch of existence. But yet and still it's a place devoid of his presence of torment and sickness. You go forever for 80 years. Of sins you committed, that's ridiculous. And you know what makes it worse is the fact that nobody else seems to have an issue with it. Just blindly giving into it but me. But maybe I'm the crazy person, maybe it's just me. I love saying there isn't a God. Well, at least that the God in the Bible isn't God. You may think it's odd that I'm black and I don't swear by a God that everybody recognizes as God. I'm tired of saying the word God. It's self-defeating and meaningless. It's just a title. Idle reverence for some lenience. And lenience for what? Every single sin that we have in our arsenal, he gave us a strut. And for what? What kind of sense would it make to create a sinful creation you judge and negate? And then send your only son to prohibit the fate that you ultimately responsible for? And why in the hell are we saying he? Cause if God had a sex, then he wouldn't be. And maybe if he was God, then he couldn't leave his greatest creation alone in this time of need. And this is exactly what I mean. We ignore the obvious in front of us. In 2,000 years from now, people gonna be making fun of us. If we last that long, if the Muslims don't kill the Christians, and the Christians don't kill the non-Christians, cause they can't compete with the Muslims. Cause the Muslims cutting people's heads off, chanting in Arabic, claiming they love them, declaring jihad on Western Muslims, taking innocent lives for nothing. But maybe it isn't, maybe it just seems. Maybe I'm the crazy person, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'll just leave and take my crazy belief system and just leave. Cause really it's just me. I'll say it once and never again. I'll never go back, cause there thinking for yourself's a hell of a sin. Us against them, I wonder who win, cause all we really have to do is spit logic to get under their skin. That's why I'm extra. That's why I'm extra. And not only does this song go out to all my atheist brothers and sisters, this song goes out to all those people that Christianity and Islam like to pick on. From my Hindus, my pagans, to my humanists, to my spiritualists, my Buddhists, all my gay and lesbian brothers and sisters out there. Basically anybody who is out there just being themselves or not afraid to think outside the box. Just remember, you have a voice now. His name is Graydon Square. And he will continue to fight for you. Hey, yo. Grand Unified.
That was Action by Graydon Square. Drop by Graydon Square's website, graydonsquare.org. Purchase his music. There's a lot of music there to listen to. I love his songs. And next, we'll be speaking with our the Atheist Helping the Homeless founder, Joe Zemecki. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem, Joe. Thank you for doing the show. And you're, I understand you're down there doing a lot for the homeless people and helping them. Now, it's kind of unusual probably to our listeners because we only hear about Christian organizations helping the homeless or doing charitable work. How did you get into this?
Well, I lived here in Austin many years, and I've seen Austin go through changes, and one of those big changes a few years ago was just an incredibly large amount of a large number of people becoming homeless in Texas in general, but also flowing here to Austin from other major cities in Texas and Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina. And then the economy kind of crashed, and we noticed here in Austin there was a whole lot more homeless folks, and but they're average, ordinary folks like you and me who were hit by economic hardships that were surprising but out of their control for a number of reasons. And so I started to pay more attention to what's happening to the homeless situation in Austin here, and it became news for a while because of so many folks coming here because we have such a friendly town in the middle of a conservative state. Austin is a bastion of liberalism, and also it's a big seat of help for homeless folks and others in need, and so there are a lot of charities here. But I went downtown once in a while and noticed that there was a great deal of activity under I-35 in downtown Austin with help groups that were helping the homeless and the weekends. And so I went and checked it out and discovered that most of it's religious groups and that there is a church service there, a whole bona fide with music every Sunday and Saturday as well with the band. And they help out the homeless a lot, but it is a very religious experience. So I said to myself that every day I hear about Christians, not just the conservatives, but others, saying that we non-religious people can't do any good, essentially, if we're operating on a secular mindset, because the religion of the day in our country is what provides us with our morality and our basis for caring and our sense of wanting to help people in need. And that never bothered me more than the day that I really wanted to help folks down there, but without pushing any prayer. And got together with some friends who are also godless here in Austin, and who have we've all been sitting around talking about up to then helping out the homeless for years. It was kind of a dream, but we didn't have much organization to it, and so we just said, why not try it and start it? And so I found two other hardcore atheist friends out here who care about the homeless as well, and we just decided to be one of those groups that help out the homeless on the weekends under the freeway there and just be a part of it all. And also I wanted to try to cover an area of giving that really wasn't covered very much by those groups or any others, secular or otherwise, and that was toiletries. A lot of groups would give out free meals, and that's great, but that goes away after a couple hours. And not many groups were giving out things that are a little more long-lasting and tangible that would help someone get a job later on. So I just thought, everybody needs to clean up before going to a job interview. And I've been on the other side of the desk before and said to myself, I wish this person had cleaned up a little, take 5 minutes, and it doesn't take long. But if you've been living on the streets, it's very difficult to do that. You know, hygiene is one of the first things that goes away from our ability every day when we become homeless. So we would put together these toilet trays of toothbrush, toothpaste, a comb, some soap, toilet paper, bottle of water, all in a clear Ziploc baggie to keep it dry, and so you can see what's in it and carry it all in one hand. And started that in September of 2009 with the monthly giveaway. We would just go there instead of once a week, like the other groups were small and starting out, so we just went there once a month. And we started off by giving 12 of these care packages away, if you'll call them those. And then the next giveaway was more, and then more, and then we ended up helping 50 people per giveaway, and then 80 people and more. And then after more than a year, you know, we've had so much fun and met some great friends down there, and now we're playing live music, sometimes with a band and sometimes with just me on guitar. And, but we still do our monthly giveaways, and we're helping 80 to 100 people sometimes with those, and all without preaching. We don't
preach
atheism.
Now, Jill, I understand that you've helped around 1,500 homeless people so far.
Right, and that was actually a couple of months ago. I put that estimate together, and we've done a couple of giveaways since then, but roughly around that. And
How are you received in the community, being that you're godless? How are you conceived? Do you have some people that are hesitant to take your help? Have you ever run into a situation where a homeless person would not deal with you, or do you not even advertise that you're atheist?
All very good questions. We don't advertise it much more than just putting T-shirts on that may be free thought T-shirts, not anti-religious, but, you know, proud to be an American atheist, something like that, positive things.
Right.
But also, I went and got a plastic sign made at a sign company with our logo on it and our name of a group and the URL for our website. And I just put that on a vehicle, like a windshield, one of our vehicles, while we're doing the giveaway. And that's all the advertising we do, really. And we've been received pretty well, even by the other Christian groups. And it does feel a little awkward sometimes, but since our goal there is purely to help people in need and not to preach or pack an ulterior motive like they do, we end up feeling a little bit odd next to the Christian groups. But, again, it's all for the purpose of helping, and I'm glad they do that. But, like you can tell, the videos we make a video each time we do a giveaway. And the latest one in February, you can tell, we pushed back our giveaway by an hour to 9 a.m., and we usually did it at 8. And the difference was dramatic because other Christian groups, other giveaway groups, would go there around that time and have their little church service starting at 9:30, roughly. And our band was still playing, and we hadn't broken down on our table and other giveaway equipment yet. And the Christians were setting up, and my goodness, a lot of them, with their band and everything. And we were playing a little long. I was on drums, but they were like, when are you going to be done and wrap up and go away? And we said, well, we just got a little more time here. We just got here a while ago, but we're almost done. And one more song, please. And they're all like, one guy was rude. Now, this is the first time we've ever had a person from another group, like the Christian groups there, give the slightest hint of rudeness towards us at all. He just said, we've been coming here for 15 years. And we said, well, we've been here since 8:30, and we're working on it, and thanks for the support and all, you know. But they set up around us, and you can see in the video, they pretty much surrounded us with their tables and their tents and their people and their giveaway and everything, which was fun. Essentially, to be there, it was fun. But you could tell that this is something they dominate, that they want to dominate, and that they want it to continue. And we're not trying to challenge that or compete with them, but to squeeze in with what's happening there can feel awkward. But again, it's all for the main priority, our number one goal, to help people in need. And by the way, we have two other main goals. The second one, less priority, but still important, is to show by example to the world that godless people do not need to have a religion or a God belief at all in order to do something good and to care. And we prove that every month. But of course, we also know that there are lots of secular help groups out there that do the same thing, essentially, help people without religion or preaching. It's just that once in a while, when we're talking to certain Christians or other theists, they'll often say, where are the atheist hospitals? Where are the atheist orphanages or soup kitchens? Can you name one by name? And it's not enough for us to say the Red Cross or the United Way. It's not enough for us to name off all these secular groups. We have to have the word atheist in the title of the group in order to convince some Christians and others. And that is kind of childish, but we knew that that was a need in our movement, that there was not already a group that specializes in charity with the word atheists in it. And that's our second goal, to use that and to provide that as a name of a positive group that's actually helping to the community. For when you have a debate with a Christian friend, you can say, oh, well, there is a group with the name Atheists in it that is helping people in a charity. And by the way, we're not tax exempt at all. We don't have a...
Yeah. But Joe, this is BBS Radio. I mean, on our station, we have a station. Most of the viewers, listeners on this station are religious. So for them, aren't you helping the devil? You have to have some kind of other moral. How do atheists have morals, Joe?
Yeah, that's always a fun question to hear.
I mean, aren't you working for the devil? You're trying to get converts somehow, aren't you? I mean, is it devil's food, cake, little messages you're giving to them?
Well, it's funny you mention, because once in a while we'll get donations of items, or some of our volunteers will go do some purchasing on their own before coming to the giveaway, and that's great. And they end up sometimes buying Angel Soft toilet paper, and I said, no. I said, look, Mr. Whipple was right. Don't squeeze the Charmin, but get the Charmin, because I don't need a little baby with angel wings on it at our table. No, it's just a joke. You know, it's not serious. We totally don't focus on things like that. In fact, we don't even ask people if they're homeless before they come get help. Nobody does down there, I don't think. But more importantly, we don't ask anybody if they're religious. It's their business. We're not there to preach. To show us, by example, we're doing good, but also the third goal was to have fun. I think in every kind of activism that I've done, that goal has been part of the goals and has been definitely been there when we have taken part in activism. And this is one of those really enjoyable things because, yes, we do feel good helping people in need. And it is important that people can feel good helping people in need, because that inspires a lot of people to help people in need. And that when we go there, we make friends and we give hugs and people recognize us. Yes, we do have some regulars who come there month after month. So we can make some friends. But most of all is that we're cooperating with all the other groups, and that there's no schedule posted anywhere over there. That we are putting a positive presence and face on atheism and godlessness in general at that location. And the people there, the people who go to get help and the people who give help, both of them have experienced what we do and seen us and heard about us. I even printed up some flyers with the name of our group at the bottom. That said, a list of help groups in Austin, secular only, that will invite homeless folks to go into their offices, and they want people to go and get help at these certain groups. So I listed off the address. I put a little map of Austin, the phone number in case they get a near payphone or something. They can go walk into these help groups and get help, and that's one flyer, one little bit of help that other groups weren't providing again. Little things like that can help.
Okay. Joe, I have to be honest. I'm really proud of the work you guys are doing, man. I'm really proud of the work you guys are doing. Have you gotten any media attention for the work that you've done?
Zero.
And this
is another kind of a bothersome thing to me, is that we've, of course, gone straight to the movement first to get this information spread around and get some help. But I've appealed to a lot of media outlets, including ones that have interviewed me in the past. And they won't even reply. And I really honestly think there's got to be one simple reason for this. A lot of times these media folks are conservative radio stations, in which it's usually Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, okay? So when they want to hear from us, they usually only want to hear from us when we're doing something that's going to anger their callers about us, make them angry about us, if we're doing something embarrassing, okay? But when we do something like this, it's win-win for everybody, not just the homeless, not just our group. But also the Christian groups are helped in a small way, if you think about it, because we're providing something for the homeless that most of those groups are not, the toiletries. I mean, they can get them from other groups, but by and large, this is an area of help that they've needed and expressed to us that they need, but aren't getting much of it from the other groups. So when they come to our table, they're getting that
Joe,
help.
We'll make sure you always have a voice on the skeptic. Are you, anytime you have an announcement to make or any upcoming event or giveaways that you're having for the atheists helping the homeless, you be sure to let us know, and we'll put the word out. We'll make sure that you're, to the best of our abilities, that your contributions go recognized.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for that.
And could you, before you go, Joe, could you tell our listeners where they can get in contact with you for donations or keeping track of what you're doing?
Sure. Our website is atheistshelpingthehomeless.org, and it has a Google checkout button that you can make a donation there. Of course, you can also just email me at joezemecki@hotmail.com. And I have a Facebook page with information I always post right away there, too. There's a few ways online we've worked on. Also, I want to make a quick announcement. This is really good news, and I can't talk about it much because it's still in the early stages. We are working on creating chapters of Atheists Helping the Homeless in other cities.
Excellent.
Excellent. In another country as well.
Well, we'll be keeping, we'll be posting on our website about that. Just let us know, Joe, and we'll definitely put the word out about it, and it'll be on our website for everybody to see. And thanks for coming on the show today.
All right, thank you for having me on.
Okay,
thanks,
we'll
Joe.
Break, and after we come back from break, we'll be we'll be talking with Arthur Donald Wright about his new book, "The Only Prayer I'll Ever Pray Is Let My People Go."
Kids should be reaching for the stars, not ways to repent. Why's the age to choose religion less than the age of consent? They knew to teach you when you were gullible, God was infallible. Even though deep down inside it wasn't as logical. Lie after lie they told you, pathological. You knew it didn't make any sense, it wasn't possible. Another oxymoron, religious education. Classes on scientifically biased information. If God gives you a brain but doesn't want you to think, you got a gap, there's no answer, he's no missing link. He's an abomination, like half a confirmation. The lesson is not to question or rise above your station. Bible classes, catechisms, and evil schools. Some generations will follow anyone, even fools. Some claim to have the only truth, a monopoly. But the most ridiculous thing religion tells to us is quite possibly,
put your trust in me, I won't lead you wrong. Just put your trust in me, how can you go wrong?
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
We won't lead you wrong.
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
Frontline political warfare, I'd have been there. They loan money into existence, I'd have been there. Capitalism means fuck you, they're gonna get theirs. Even if it means you die, they just sit there. Freedom and justice for the wealthy. Everybody else gets shafted and we think that this is healthy. Still on the reserve, we just roam for acres. If you ain't white and middle class, they'll need to see your papers. Democrat and Republican, the same party. I rep the movement of the people, Fela Kuti's calling. I think they only want the polarized sides to vocalize. That'll change when we decide to mobilize. But as long as there's money, then they can be bought. As long as they're dummies, they cannot be fought. They only want you as a drone playing your part. While the very leaders that mislead us, they have every saying that keep teaching us.
Put your trust in me, I won't lead you wrong. Just put your trust in me, how can you go wrong?
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
We won't lead you wrong.
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
The labels make you think it's fair game. They've never been on the side of the artist from the start. It's a sham game. There's a war on for your damn brain. And for the prize, they'll throw everything at you, money and fame. There's just some things money can't change. So think about that before you go and sign your damn name. You should run soon as you see them. Remember, they need you more than you need them. Forget them. You can do this by your goddamn self. They ask you to sign a deal, tell them I can't help. This is the independent artist is everywhere. Anyone who's been screwed by a label or shoved a share. I suggest we boycott them forever to make it up. No more flipping of our free expression to make a buck. This is a moratorium on them enslaving us, raping us. Yet after all, we learn about how corrupt they are to keep begging us.
Put your trust in me, I won't lead you wrong. Just put your trust in me, how can you go wrong?
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
We won't lead you wrong.
Keep telling us.
Just put your trust in us.
Keep telling us.
And that is music by Graydon Square, Special Pleading. Remember to go to GraydonSquare.org and download his music. The guy is a great artist. And next we'll be speaking with Donald Wright, the author of The Only Prayer I'll Ever Pray Is Let My People Go. He'll be talking about his journey from Christianity to atheism. And hello, Donald.
Thomas, how you doing?
How you doing, Donald?
Okay, R.W.?
Yes,
glad
sir.
Glad to be on the show. Thank you all so much.
Oh, you're welcome, man. I'm happy to have you on the show because we really need to have more African Americans speaking about this, and because it's we're really underrepresented in the African American community from the skeptical side, atheists, and everything else. It's almost like if you're not a believer, you're not black or something. But hopefully, we could get rid of that one day.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but it's certainly well worth it in terms of improving our society.
Now, I enjoyed reading the book, but BBS Radio is a pretty religious station, if you notice, and I guess I'm just going to ask it for most of the believers out there want to know, Donald, is how did the devil get a hold of you?
Did you give us like a play-by-play? Or how did that happen?
How did the devil walk in and zap me, right?
Yeah.
Well, I like to say that it's a. I mean, I am thrilled that if the devil did it, thank the devil, because I have moved into a different way of thinking about a lot of things in life, not just about religion. And I think what happened is because I unlocked my mental capacity that religion restricted. And so I'm glad to be away from religion. The journey pretty much started just based on an incident that I experienced in a church. In fact, in this church that I was a deacon. And I was a member of this church for 19 years here in Houston. And predominantly black mega church. Well known throughout the city. The pastor was pretty much well known throughout the nation, really. Prominent pastor. And the particular situation was the pastor being involved in a basically a homosexual scandal. Mm. And to kind of summarize it, as the church decided to keep him as the pastor, as we voted as a membership, well, I was pretty much disturbed about that, and I was not comfortable with him staying there as a pastor. So my family and a lot of other families decided to leave the church and go find another church. Well, what took place for me was, in the midst of that decision, I made a decision to become more of a student, to become more studious, to really do some in-depth study of Christianity in the Bible. And in that process, I also had to study other religions. So by me doing that, doing it in a studious, scholarly manner, I learned a lot of things about the Bible that I didn't know. And therefore, going into that process, I saw many contradictions, and I saw things that I hadn't seen before, but they were things that just weren't believable and that I just couldn't accept anymore. And there weren't any answers for it. But they were making the process, the religious process, forces you to adapt to to those thoughts or those beliefs. It basically forces you into a belief system that doesn't allow you to ask questions. So it's strictly based on faith. So the idea of you assuming faith means that you don't have any regards for truth and facts. And what happened from that process is that when I started learning facts about the religion and about the Bible, then it just made me want to question things even more. And then the primary turning point was when I read Age of Reason by Thomas Paine. And after reading that, I didn't have any problems. I walked away from the church probably within a couple of months. And that occurred, the last church I attended was September 2006.
Yeah, that's, wow. I noticed when I was reading your book, what you mentioned is something I've talked to many other atheists about, an experience we all seem to go through, is the what's next phase.
Once you
finally get rid of that idea that religion is beyond questioning, it kind of snowballs from there. You just gather information, and your mind changes to what you're learning. Tell us a little bit about that. What's next phase?
Yeah, that's a that was a process that was taking place before I made the change about religion. So I was going through a lot of what next phases. Probably about 4 years before that, and it basically started when I started my engineering consulting firm in January 2002, and even that was a what next phase, because of the fact that I walked away from a very well paid engineering job with a growing company, and I made that change within 2 months of deciding to go out on my own. So it wasn't something that took me a whole lot of time to do it once I understood my skills and what I had to offer. And once I decided that I didn't want to put up with the BS anymore in a corporate setting, then I made a decision to do it. And so it made sense to me. It made sense to my wife and family. And so everything else was a matter of me offering what I was doing for them to somebody else. But be able to do it on my own terms and in my own office. The what next phase started then. Then as time went by, I started making changes in my eating habits. I started making changes in my concepts about capitalism, health, altogether health. I started observing things within our political system and in our government that I no longer appreciated, and I started changing the way I thought about those things. And so when it came time for me to evaluate religion, I didn't have any fear about making changes when I noticed something that didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So the what next phases was happening long before I made the change in religion. So I was being prepared for that, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a background in engineering. You went to school for it. Was it that background, that engineering, that that started you to questioning? I mean, that amount of critical thinking. But then again, before you became an unbeliever, you still had the same background for all those years. How did those two coexist? Why do you think this happened so much?
Well, the critical thinking is what I've been trained to do. I've been trained to think through problems. I've been trained to ask the right questions in order to get legitimate answers in order to solve problems. So the critical thinking is always, I guess, within my range or in my realm of my professionalism has been there. But what I did notice is that as I was gravitating toward thinking differently about other things, I think the most important part was you have to be exposed to the information. So if you don't get the information, you can't use critical thinking. Right. And that's the most important part of our society and our education system, I think, and that is that we're not getting legitimate, quantified information that allows us to evaluate it. But religion takes on a whole different side in that religion doesn't allow that. So what happens is that I have other friends that are engineers. They can use critical thinking in other areas, but when it comes to religion, they shut it down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's because of the way religion has been taught, and it's been taught from the standpoint of this is what's going to provide you with security, peace of mind, and a joy, unspeakable joy, so far. So, and therefore, you should not question this. This is already set in stone. You don't have to worry about it. Just do it. So
right.
I found that's pretty amazing that there are people that use critical thinking in so many other areas, but religion doesn't allow them to do it, and so they shut that down.
It's like a cognitive dissonance, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, I noticed in the book you had mentioned about the black mega churches and how they take advantage of the community and how some people are already going without, but they would give that last dollar that they have to the church in hopes that they'll get something back in return greater.
Right.
Right, right. Yeah, that's pretty amazing, man. I've heard stories about this pretty much all my life. I've known people that would actually put money in church on Sundays and then borrow money for lunch on Monday.
Wow.
So I've seen these kind of things, and it's amazing that the religious community restricts people or confines people with that type of mentality, and therefore they are not capable, really, of taking care of themselves. They are really mentally incapable because of their decision making process. I had a story just this couple of weeks, last weekend, when we were doing the Day of Solidarity. Mm-hmm. And so we had a gathering here in Houston, and I met a young lady there for the first time. And she shared the story that her mother would not pay the rent in order for her to put money in pay her tithes and offering.
Wow.
And she was saying how her mother did that continuously. And wow. And they were moving from place to place because of things like this. So it's an incredible thing to listen to. And these mega churches are teaching about this prosperity gospel and all this. And all they're doing is raking in the money from the poor, primarily, because most black people are. And therefore, they're dumping all this money into this huge coffer. But there's pretty much nothing coming out for return that benefits the people. And that's really sad.
And they're always talking about what great work the black church does and how they give. And I kind of agree with Robert Ingersoll. A beggar never has anything to give. And, you know, and it really hurts people because they take it in, and it's not like they're equally giving it out. And some members, they need help. And when they go to the church to ask, they don't have anything for them, and they'll turn people away. But the reverend is driving in nice cars. The reverend is, he has a
nice
big
rings house, on.
And they can't find anything in the Bible to support that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's such a sad state of affairs, and we hear about it all the time. It's going on every week, and but yet and still, people are in so much fear due to their lack of information, their insecurities within themselves, till they want to take a few minutes to just evaluate what's going on, and so they stay into that that mold where they think religion is the only answer. And it's going to take a lot of people like ourselves and the work that you guys are doing to encourage people to think a little differently about things. Just ask a few questions. And that's what I did. I mean, I asked them some incredible questions about the Bible, and I couldn't get any answers. And it no longer made sense.
They weren't willing to give you any answers either.
Huh?
I said they weren't willing to give you any answers, anything that contradicted what you should be believing. If
right.
Trying to answer.
Right.
And, you know, for our community, I think that does a lot of damage to us. Being at the state that we're already in, I don't think it does anything that is going to help us move to the next level. It's not. How have you been received so far in the African American community for your book with your peers and your family and people around you?
Well, it's been a, I have to say that it hasn't been totally negative. I still have great conversations with my family. And I think I have a few cousins that are a little bit disappointed. I think I have quite a few cousins that haven't.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
Yeah. And then I still have a few friends, but some of them have kind of distanced themselves. In other words, they don't call as much or haven't
an
interest in having real long conversations.
Right.
But when I do get around them, they don't run. I have to say that that's a plus, and that's because I've always been a very engaging person anyway,
right.
And so if we are in a place, then we're going to talk about the reason that we are there, and the conversation takes on a pattern of its own, and so if something comes up where religion is introduced, then I'm certainly going to participate in it. In fact, I'm happy to. But I think the difference is they can't talk about it because they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so their conversation is going to be restricted to a few sentences, and they're going to say, I just have faith.
Right.
And it shuts down on that.
Or when you finish, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Right.
It's kind of an awkward thing, because you'll find most atheists or non-believers have read this book thoroughly, whereas most believers or Christians haven't. It's like almost like you pay people pay to go to church to have people read this to them. But the bad part about that is they only get to hear the nice stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing is, not only have most non-believers read the book, they've read about the book. You know,
right.
they go into the history of the text and the authorship and things that the average rank and file believer, they just don't, they're not hungry for that other information, because what's focused to them is faith. Just have faith in what you're being told.
Well, they've been trained very well in regards to, they thoroughly acknowledge that the pastor or the preachers are anointed by God, and that God has really given them that information. So if they receive the information from those people, then they don't have to go home and study it for themselves, because they're receiving it from this anointed person.
Right.
And that really handicaps them, because they can't explain where this anointment comes from. And so they're not going to question that either, because they don't know how to question that.
Right. Yeah, that's a shame. And so I hope we move beyond that one day where we're free to think, you know, in society or even in the church, and question some of these things, where religion isn't such an unquestionable thing. I really think that harms us. And I'm glad you wrote your book, and you and others out there in the African-American community are speaking out about your experiences and making a difference. So hopefully one day we won't be afraid to approach this subject in public and around our family and you know.
Right.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be a very different society when religion is reduced 30%. I mean, I'd like to see it completely eliminated, but to see it reduced 30%, we'll see a difference.
Right.
Because people will be able to evaluate things with so much more clarity.
And
it eliminates... It eliminates so much of their prejudicial thinking.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I definitely enjoyed reading this book all the way through, Don. I'm actually read it again.
And, okay.
I'm glad to have this on my bookshelf. I thank you for the book. Can you tell
you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, just tell other people to get it.
and before you go, Don, Donald, can you tell people what you're wanting them to get out of this book, and where can they go find this book here?
Okay. The main focus of the book is to, as we talked about, it shares my journey a little bit. I know I don't go into a lot of detail about it, but I certainly introduce the most important things that took place in regards to my journey. The other thing that I attempt to do is to introduce some historical perspectives on it, on religion in general, and how it transpired in the black community. So I do a little history lesson. The other thing is I evaluate religion in general, and one of the things that I've been conscious of, that as I've talked to people about the book, particularly Christians, it's a lot of questions in there. That I put a lot of questions in that book, and I wanted them to read those questions and try to give answers. And so those questions are there to challenge their intellect. And if they don't know the answers, then maybe they should go to their pastor and ask him the questions to see if he can give them the answers. So I have things in there that I'm challenging the intellect from questions. And then the other thing that I want to convey is that there's a strong sense of humanism in the book. And, mm-hmm. and I want people to understand that if when you can walk away from religion, then you can be a better human.
Right.
And that's one of the most important pieces that I want to convey. And that is, humanism is a lot more important. Mm-hmm. And to be able to receive that message would be be something I would really appreciate.
Right. Well, thank you, Donald, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Don.
Appreciate you agreeing to do this interview with us.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate it. I'll be happy to come back if it permits. Okay. But the book is available at Amazon, and also I have a website, drwrightbooks.com, so you can get information there.
Thank you, and thank you for listening today. We'll be back. Our next show is March 20th. We'll be interviewing Darryl Wright, and we'll be talking about his book, The God Virus. You've been listening to The Skeptic Hour.
Their attempts to control things really are.